Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we're going to have some quick news. Then we're going to talk about the new organized play with a guest, Dennis. After which, Alex and I are going to fill in some gaps on IDs, which is what, Alex?
Intentional draws. I don't talk in the table of contents. You know that, right?
Yeah, right. Never. Then we're going to have the tip of the week and finally some closing comments.
John, this is episode 8, and it has been a busy week in news. Very busy.
A lot of tournaments,
although I don't have all of them yet. I don't know if there are any you wanted to particularly highlight.
No, I've been noticing one trend. I don't know if the annals support this, but there seems to be a lot of Lord of the Crossing.
There was a tournament with a 40% Lord of the Crossing in the field in Massachusetts, so that was kind of interesting. But you brought me onto my favorite subject, the annals. They're back. They're fixed. They work. All the data going back to the beginning of January that I can recover has been recovered. So everything from the spreadsheet and then everything else I've been able to pester or find from alternate forums. We're starting to work on improvements of it. We have a better backup protocol that is in place. So this data loss will never lose more than a day of data, no matter what happens. So it's safe to use again. I encourage you to use it. It's actually looking pretty interesting. I took a look at the King's Peace meta overall, which is now widely influenced by Battaglia por el Muro, because obviously that's 150 data points out of the, like, basically 1,000 that I have for tournaments using the King's Peace. There were some surprising trends. I don't know if you have any guesses as to what the King's Peace meta looks like, John?
I don't, but I do have one thing I want to ask. Why don't you have, like, a donate now on the annals or something else? Because you're paying all these hosting fees.
I need to get either donate now. I actually have a slightly more ambitious project for how to handle that. Unfortunately, it requires time to set that project afoot. So I think we could probably expect to donate now soon to help cover the hosting fees and the automated backup processes as well. I have a really good plan. It's awesome. I'll tell you about it someday when I have time to begin to implement the plan that will solve all my problems and world hunger and all the other things too.
World hunger. Sweet. You should really work on that. I mean, that's something that's worth it.
So yeah, one of the most interesting things to come out of this meta for the King's Peace is that there is only one house that is significantly over or under representing in the cut. Only one. Any guesses as to which?
The Lion.
It's not. It's not the Lion.
Then what is it?
It's Targ. Oh, now, don't get me wrong. Lannister is performing really well. Lannister is 25% of the cut and an absurd 35% of wins. But if you look as to how much it's played relative to how it's performing in the cut, it's pretty close. It's above one, but not hugely above one. But Targ is seeing less and less play, but it is still performing exceptionally well and is therefore the only house that is above and no house is below. Almost every house is starting to rise to the point where they're as frequent in the cut as they are in the field, which is really, really interesting.
That's very cool.
One of the other points that I thought was kind of interesting is that Lords of the Crossing has been seeing a fair bit of play. It's an even qualification ratio, pretty much on par with fealty. So it's good to see that the first agenda has not completely dominated, but it's not been crushed. And then maybe the other odd thing is that Banner the Lion is doing ridiculously well, which I think is probably because it's Targ Banner the Lion that's doing really well and is driving up the Targ and the Lion stats.
Yep.
Anyway, so keep submitting. We have a new meta by next week. We're going to see. I expect this pie chart to change drastically with First Snow Winter. Really excited about that. Yeah, should be an exciting next season.
For tip of the week, did we ever do a tip of the week on hidden gems?
We haven't, but we're not in the tip of the week segment. John, are you telling me that we are taking too long in the intro?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll go over the other stuff very, very quickly. lots of news out of Gamma, which is the Game of Manufacturers Association. They had a conference in Vegas, so FFG talked about organized play policy. They posted that article apparently early because it hadn't yet been announced at Gamma. So I'm sure somebody's heads were rolling if they had multiple heads, I suppose. There's new organized play organization. There's new OP policies. They've hired some new OP people. There's a Zach, who is a prominent Magic judge, who is also part of this organized play stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about how there may be some money going into Thrones. And we know that there's going to be a judge policy this year and that the tests will be in July 2016. Yeah, a judge program. Now, we have not had a chance to talk about a judge program at all. I have a thread on CardGameDB I'd love people to check out, which is just asking people for what they think a judge program should look like, because I don't want to have to write another article about how terribly screwed up FFG's organized play policy is. So maybe if the community can throw a whole bunch of ideas, I can send them an email to someone involved in the process so that we could at least have some input, because, you know, I guess that's the other point. I had to write another article this week about the tournament document, which has some absolutely ridiculous stuff in it. And again, we don't get much time to talk about that this week, but it's better suited to an article format, another rant about what are they smoking. It wasn't supposed to be an article series. It wasn't supposed to be bitching about the organized play every 3 months, John.
They did a lot of right things.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's just not one that tournament really document. Bad thing.
We also did get to see the regional kit, and I do want to take a little bit of time to talk about that. Fantastic playmat. We've been talking since we first saw the art that we wanted that playmat. It's glorious to see it. Actually, the FFG logo when the Game of Thrones stuff is very pulled to the side and small. It's just the art takes front and center, which I love. But there was a piece of news in there, I don't know if you caught it, that kind of disappointed me.
I know what disappointed you, because you're an international flavor and because you told me earlier. What you're upset about is the fact that only the regional winners from North America, or is it just the States, get their place reserved at Worlds and not the European
one. Yeah, and it doesn't actually say that. What it says is that regional winners in North America will have their place reserved. It doesn't say only, but if you're going to state it like that, you basically mean only. And to be fair, this is the same thing as last year, but last year's Worlds was a bit of a cluster something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you expect that they would have improved on that and had a more international flavor, especially since they're talking about having European championships for all their games and so on. So I find that that's an uncalled for lack of improvement there. An uncalled for lack of, yeah, I won't even try to rephrase that.
It was better than previous years. At least there's going to be dates for regionals for Europeans. There's that. Something. A little something.
There was also a spoiler article for some of the out-of-faction cards, the non-Stark cards in the Stark box. Did you see
Burning
that?
Burning on the Sand.
That was the name of the article?
Yeah.
The art is Magali art. It's those his viper eyes staring out at you from one of the sand snakes. Also fantastic. But I really enjoyed the preview article. I think Tara got to see two cards that they're very excited about. Not like they need more cards, even though they keep moaning. They're still the best performing faction, so. Huh? But we also saw another Quentin.
Yeah, I'm not super excited about the Quentin. He seems all right, but
I think he's probably pretty good. But what most interested me was this Quentin was posted, and someone mentioned that he doesn't work if he gets burned. Because obviously he kills a character with lower strength than his, and if his strength is zero, he's not going to kill anyone. And I just think that's a really Nedley touch. I think I can pick out one of my Nedley calls for the Stark box when we get to review it.
Yep.
Also, sort of retroactive spoiler alert, but, you know, too late. We had Nate talk a little bit about how he helped shape the identity of the faction, not only through the cards in it, but the cards that would serve in opposition to it.
And it makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm not convinced by looking at these cards that they feel like anti-Stark.
Are they supposed to feel like anti-Stark?
Well, they're supposed to feel like they're, at least the way Nate was wording it in the interview with us, that he can exploit some of the Stark flaws that also helps define a faction, right? You need flaws in there, and you need how it interacts with the other factions
right.
to be part of its identity.
But I mean, so Stark has an entry weakness.
Yeah.
Stealth weakness. He has both these things.
And he does have, like, we have a lot of low strength characters like Arya, who's vulnerable to burn, and Bran, both of whom would be eaten by the House Florent Knight or by the burn effects that we're seeing. And I guess if they're playing winter, presumably summer will be a counter. So maybe it's there. Maybe it's just a little more second order and subtle than I was expecting.
Yeah. I think it would be dangerous to have really, really powerful effects that just totally destroy a single faction.
If your opponent is playing Stark, he loses the game kind of cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to see that. Definitely not. I agree. Last few things that I have, I just saw it posted today. I actually don't know how to pronounce this, so I'm going to...
What? We got to keep this in.
Well,
Alex,
I don't
know how to pronounce
it. I don't know if people say arse or probably not. It's probably ARS Technica. The sort
Ars
of
Technica.
Ars? Ars. Okay, Ars. Not arse. Okay, fine. Had a review of Game of Thrones there, and that's a fairly high-profile location that's not necessarily within the board gaming community to see that kind of a positive coverage. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, very cool.
And then the last point that I have is not really that important to us, because we've gotten a ton of feedback over the last few episodes, a lot of people reaching out, contacting us. We love it. But I look at all these other casts and these other articles where there's so many people putting in the time. I would urge you to let people know if they wrote an article you appreciate, even if it's just to say that, because a lot of content creators are doing it. They need to know that they're doing it for someone.
Hit the like on the article. There's a little button.
Yeah, hit the like on the article, because I'm seeing so many of these content that I am appreciating, and I do try and take the time to go out and post a comment, whether it's criticism or feedback, to show, you know, I listened, I cared, you're being listened to. And that's not something where people are falling short with us. And maybe it's all in private messages to the other people and it's fine. But, you know, there are a lot of articles that look like they'd be ripe for comments. And if you enjoyed them or appreciate the effort people made, make that extra effort to let them know. We don't want this bubble of content producers to burst.
Today we're joined by the illustrious Dennis, and he actually runs a YouTube page that people should check out. What's it called, Dennis?
The name of the channel is AMC. I'm calling it A Meager Contribution. It's linked all over the Facebook page. So far, people seem to like it, and the response has been amazing. So thank you, everybody that has already watched the channel.
And how many comments have you gotten where it's like, wow, you sound completely different than your forum personality?
All of them.
Now, before we jump into today's topic, I want John to say something for me. Repeat after me. I am under no duress or coercion.
I'm not going to repeat things like that. You're going to tell me I'm going to do like stats or something. It's not happening.
Yeah,
we're talking.
You're
about
the one who got to
play.
Pick today's topic.
Yeah,
after yelling at me last week about rules and what are we going to cover
money
today?
Money prizes, and organized play. And if you go too much into the rules, Alex, we're kicking you off, and me and Dennis are talking about cool stuff.
Do you have actually kick control on here?
Can no, you do. You're the one that started.
Well, then I have the power.
But I'll be thinking like I'm going to be kicking you.
All right.
But because I got to pick the topic, I'm going to pick the order. And the first part I want to talk about is the new organized play structure in general that FFG announced, because they announced a pretty big change. I know Alex isn't up to date, Dennis, but are you?
Yeah, I went through the document, and I have to say, for once, I don't have any complaints about what FFG has done. I have to praise them. I think what they did was long overdue. It was way too crowded in Worlds, and they finally either backed into an appropriate solution or they took somebody's appropriate suggestions. But what they're doing, I think, is exactly what they needed to do.
So for the listeners that haven't read the document, what they've decided is actually to split their Worlds event into two different dates. Their Star Wars events are going to be sometime in May. And I know that Alex just stumbled on and realized why that was.
No, I didn't. That was Chris Schoenthal.
Someone had to tell you, right?
No. That was Chris Schoenthal who didn't realize.
Okay.
In fact, if you'll recall, when we were discussing the world schedule for last year, I specifically suggested splitting it up so that the Star Wars ones were in May. I knew why.
Okay. And then all their other LCG card games, basically, because the Star Wars LCG is with the Star Wars, but everything else is in the normal November time slot. So, Dennis, do you know why May is an important date for Star Wars?
May the 4th.
There you go. See?
Wow. Yeah. Actually, you caught me off guard with that. I was surprised that I knew.
Top quality guests. The production value I found on this was a little bit less than normal. That's actually what jumped out at me. The banner was kind of like this generic blue and red. The graphs caused me trouble, which means you must have had a fit, Alex.
I practically had an aneurysm. I agree that the content of the article, I'm with Dennis. Normally, they take one step forward, one step back. Here, I think they actually took two steps forward. But man, if I were grading those figures, they're completely illegible until you realize they're supposed to come together for no apparent reason. Like, it just drove me nuts.
So I know a lot of people complained that they thought Worlds was a little overcrowded. Like, personally, I didn't think it was all that bad, except for one thing, which I think is probably the main reason why they ended up splitting it into two tracks, and that's X-Wing and the games that require these gigantic tables for very few amount of people. So for an X-Wing table, as far as I'm concerned, you could probably fit maybe 10 Thrones games on top of it. So once X-Wing and Armada and Imperial Assault and all these tabletop games are out of the way, I cannot wait until we see our first Worlds without that in the way, because you're going to have so much more room to breathe. They're going to be able to fit so much more games. And I know they're going to do all of the side events that we've been asking them to do for so long, because now they're going to finally have the space.
Oh, okay. You hold that thought right there, those side event things, because that's something that 2.0 players actually haven't experienced probably a lot, because we're really in a new, you know, SC season. But I want to talk a little bit about side effects just quickly, because we have done an episode on it in the past. But I think that's an important comment, Dennis. But there's a lot more in this article than just the split, right?
Yeah, I would first of all say that there's a lot to talk about in the split itself. It's not just for Worlds. It restructures SC season and regional season. And I think we definitely got the lucky end of that for a bunch of reasons. The first is, now the Star Wars season for regionals goes through the holidays.
Yeah.
Which is to say that you're traveling around Christmas, which is awful, which is to say that the stores that are hosting it are at their busiest retail time ever, which is awful, while we still get to go with our existing schedule where we're traveling in the spring, where we're not going through the holidays for that. I mean, store championships are running a little bit through the holidays because they're starting earlier, but it really shouldn't be as big a deal. So I think we definitely got the sweet end of the deal there.
So am I misremembering it? I don't remember all that big a change for our schedule other than store championships start immediately after Worlds as opposed to, you know, end of winter, early spring.
That's right. And then there's a 2-month gap between SC regional and then between regional and Worlds, I think.
So it sounds like rather than having the 2-month break directly after Worlds, they're just pushing that to after store championships.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be great, because that'll give a nice break for player-organized tournaments to slot right in there like we usually do anyways.
But the other great thing about that is it actually means that between store championships and regionals, you're going to have a bigger difference in card pool.
I didn't even think about that.
One bleed into the other, right? You're going to have a couple packs released at least. And if, you know, the box sets start coming out, maybe a couple packs and a box set in between, and then there'll be like a whole new environment.
And they are upping their tourniquet support as well to 4 times a year instead of 3 times a year to help plug in those gaps as well. So,
which I think people will love. People go crazy for the alt arts, as do I, and I think that's a great change.
So we'll cover this a little bit more in more detail, but FFG is no longer allowing, or it seemed to be implying that they're not allowing non-FFG cards in tournaments, which means alt art cards that are from them, in my opinion, and I'll say my opinion because we'll argue about this later and Alex will probably prove me wrong. You can play in tournaments, but everything else you can't. And I think that's in the new tournament rules. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
But hasn't that always been the case? And it's just been overlooked by local tournament
organizers? Well, they do say components now, which could include house cards and even tokens. I don't know how likely that is to be enforced. I think that is something we'll get into when we talk about the tournament documents.
Oh, that's silly. There's no way that's the case, because you could say anything for that as far as table dressing. Are they going to say you can't use a non-FFG playmat?
That's a good question.
Yeah, there's no way that they're going to enforce that.
But there's still more in this organized play, right? I think so. They talk about European dates. They talk about continentals and the fact that the European metas are going to have continentals. That's big.
They talk about not having European dates yet and not having any information, but at least they're planning on having some.
This is it. They're planning on having some, and they're planning on having continentals for both sides. And they're saying that the winner of the continental on the European side is getting a flight.
They haven't given too many details on that. I have asked questions through channels, and it seems like rumors have it, this is third-hand information, that the European Championship is likely to be in Belgium as one big convention for all of these Asmodee-related things. So it will not be specifically paired with Stalik, which is not really a surprise because none of the other games had their own Stalik. It's a bit of a shame, although again, Stalik was growing a little too big for the castle. I don't know how that's going to play out. But I think at least for all the other games, they've got to be happy to get a continental championship. And then Thrones, we may be the ones who lose from that.
Yeah, I mean, I know this isn't going to make Thrones player feel better, but you're taking a small hit for the overall team here, right? The FFG organized play team. So take that into consideration, that they're doing really what's right for the larger European community that plays all the games.
So I think they're making an attempt to do the right thing by the European community. I don't actually expect the European community to embrace these new tournaments all that much, to be completely honest with you.
Probably not.
They've already got well-established multiple annual tournaments in Europe and Asia, such as the Battle for the Wall, the Dockside Days, the Tourney for Castle Stalik, all of these things that have been running for years and years and years. I expect the FFG tournaments to be attended well, but it's certainly not going to take away from the existing tournaments, which will continue to have their existing level of prestige as far as I'm concerned.
Now, they already have nationals in each of these countries as well, so those will probably stay about the same. And now, actually, there's no national season, so they can be moved around any time in the year. Nothing wrong on that end, but I think I agree. I think the European Continental will, for all the other games, be like the big selling point, and for Thrones, it will be less of an event.
They seem to be trying to line up their bigger events at big conventions. That seemed to be kind of one of the pushes that was coming through here.
Definitely what I read too, yeah.
Right? They're saying, you know, we know North American Continental is going to be Gen Con. We know that the U.S. National is going to be at a big convention. And they even said, like, we expect other countries to be able to have a little bit of movement in their picking of events so that they can pick these bigger conventions to hold the event, which is kind of cool. Having their nationals at these bigger conventions give it more exposure, which can only lead to more players for us.
That's fair. I
think more players is good.
You know, it's mostly advertising.
And then they can all come over here and take our titles at Worlds.
As they deserve if they're beating our best.
I'm looking at you, Alvaro.
Now, you mentioned travel. They also mentioned that starting in 2017, they're going to give their world champions travel to the next year.
Yep.
So just to ensure that it feels more competitive because last year's champions are there and you can steal their title.
Oh, really? Can you explain that? I'm not familiar with that.
So basically, if you win Worlds 2017, you get your flight and accommodation for Worlds 2018.
For every single game?
For every single game.
Wow. It's pretty solid.
It is. Yeah. It is pretty solid. But I think it's mostly to give that impression of...
you're going to play the last
competitive tournament. Yeah, exactly. That
good for FFG. I got to give them a round of applause on that one. That was a good move. Something I would have expected from them, to be honest, but they did the right thing.
Super happy with all this organized play stuff.
Now, there is one more thing that I see in that article, and this is by implication only. Reading that, the fact that they draw attention to the fact that world champions will still have a card design strongly suggests to me that Continentals, and especially not North American Nationals, will not.
Yes.
And I'm not in the slightest bit surprised, and I think that's probably the right move in the end, and I know that sounds horrible coming from someone who has a card design already, but the clutter and the other games already don't do it for these additional tournaments, but that is one aspect where I feel Stalik will unfortunately suffer just for the sake of normalizing across games and making the system internally consistent.
I agree with you completely, only because of just inside information that I have about people who have card designs in the queue that have been trying to get them worked out for over 2 years and still haven't had it done. So I think by doing that, they're probably trying to ease their workload into something a little bit more realistic so that they're not working with five or six different people throughout the year trying to get these designs done.
I won my card design in 2014.
Yeah. And where is it? Where's Mag the Mighty, John?
Mag the Mighty. Hey, that could actually work. He can be beyond the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. It's true. But I want to do something with Alex. You know, he could be like Old Bear's Crow, and I could be Old Bear.
Corn.
Corn. That's it.
You guys are weirdos.
Do you guys have anything else?
That we knew.
On this organized play article?
That's all I have on the article. They did talk at Gamma about a few more things related to it. One is that they promised that this year for real, unlike last year for real and the year before for real, they're going to have a judge program, and that the certification program will be in July 2016.
Yes. I think that's a good idea. They should have a certification program, and they're going to need that because of other things we'll talk about later, because me and Dennis, we're going to get into it. So we're going to dial back on that.
I don't know if you wanted to go into the alternate format discussion as well.
Yeah, I think let's talk a little bit about alternate format, because you brought up a good point saying, you know, now they're going to have room for all this alternate format. For players that haven't played in 1.0 and haven't listened to our podcast, which Alex will probably link somewhere so you can find that one.
What, link our own podcast?
Well, just so they can listen to it instead of just getting this little
last
summary.
One we did. Okay, I see.
On alternate formats. There used to be alternate formats with box sets. So a box set would come out and it would have an alternate format in it. And I think that's how most of the alternate formats got originally introduced. And then players also created these alternate formats. But at major events, they used to have side events or warm-up events using these alternate formats. I remember playing in a final against Dan from DC where he won the alternate format Hand of the King, where you actually had a character that was always in play, basically, acting as the Hand of the King, and there's all these special rules around that character. And they were a lot of fun. There was team events. There was, you know, we won't go into crazy detail, but I think they were great. Draft was an alternate format to start with, and it seems to be a real format now.
Well, not yet for 2.0, but yeah. It's got to be coming.
You would assume so.
Well, I mean, they have to get the card pool big enough that they can make a decent draft cube, right? So, you know, maybe a year from now.
How big do you think that needs to be before they can have a viable cube?
Well, honestly, I think that given that they already have the second cycle all designed, and we know that because we've seen them spoil the first chapter back of the second cycle, I suspect that two cycles and maybe two box sets is probably enough to draw from.
I would think so, because they're going to add a few extra cards just for draft, right? Like they did last time, I would assume.
So it may not be their most robust draft set, but I think they could certainly start planning it now or whenever they finish testing a second box set.
But we're all in agreement that there's absolutely going to be doing this, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if they're doing it right, they're going to add alternate art cards in there for a couple of them so that you can have a reason to keep buying them.
If they wanted to really do it right, they would randomly put in an alternate.
I think
that's
expensive, though. I think that kind of printing process is expensive.
The random put in, yeah, might be expensive. Mm-hmm.
But if they just take the alternate art cards they've already made and they put them in there so that if you get it put to the sword or whatever, it's an alt art version, then people might have an incentive to go, oh, you know, I want a full playset of the alt art put to the sword or whatever.
Yeah, I remember one of the old 1.0 players, MDC, was always saying they should put foils in the draft packs, which obviously I didn't like because it made it way too CCG-like. But if they started with alternate art randomly in draft packs, that could be a fun way to sort of not necessarily push the draft packs, but make it a little more exciting to open them.
Yeah, and also more exciting in the fact that you would get something after the game. The game is fun enough. Like, I'm happy to pay draft booster prices. They weren't that expensive. But
that also makes the drafting itself very interesting, because if an alt art comes up of a card that you don't have and you're not playing that house, you may still draft it just so you can keep it.
Just like they do in Magic, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. And I think, you know, the draft packs in general right now are already randomized, right, Alex? So it wouldn't be that big, I would think, to add randomized alt art.
You're right. Whatever they have is able to pull randomly.
Yep.
So I suspect that you could have a pool for the uncommons or whatever in which one out of every four put the swords is an old art.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah, I think it could be done. I think you're right.
So that'd be cool. So I think that's all we need to say on alternate formats. If people want to know about the old ones from 1.0, they can listen to the old podcast.
Oh, I think it'll just be nice not to be in the warehouse, right?
Yeah. One more thing before we move on is what brought this discussion on in the first place is now that Star Wars and X-Wing and these massive space-consuming games are not going to be at the Thrones version of Worlds, we're going to be able to have all these alternate formats if we want at our own Worlds, which previously they had to cancel because those other games, they just took up way too much space.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't help last year that we had 1.0 Joust, 1.0 Melee, 1.0 Draft, 2.0 Joust, 2.0 Melee. Like, that was already eating up a lot of Thrones time.
Sure.
So, Alex, there's a new tournament.
You don't need to sound so excited, John. Well,
Here, let me do the summary of
the completely stuff. Natural transition.
Yeah. The stuff that I care for. They have a bunch of new roles defined. I didn't read them. It's like organizer, marshal, judge, player, spectator, leader, basic conduct for each of those roles, a little description. We talk about the tournament play, which hasn't really changed. And then they talk about, you know, the different, they're calling them Swiss pairings and now single elimination rounds on top, which is just the same way we played before. But what they do describe, which is kind of interesting, is advanced structure and basic structure for cut. So they tried to fix their boondoggle, I would say, with that poor structure for cuts with a slightly better structure. And I'm sure you'll be able to pick it apart to tell me how much worse or it is than I think. And they defined also these roles, right? That, you know, what is a casual event? What is a premier event? Which they've talked about before, but there's a little bit more meat to it.
This one actually matters. So the new tourney levels, the relaxed, formal, and premier, when we saw that in this general document that applies to all their games, I was assuming that premier was still going to be regional and up like it already is. But we just saw in the regional announcement today that a regional is considered a formal event, which probably means that a store championship is a relaxed event. So it sort of gets bumped down a category. I thought they were just renaming to avoid the word casual and competitive. But it turns out that they're also changing their categories. Store championships become relaxed, which means that, most importantly, that a judge can play at a store championship, but not at a regional.
Which is the way it is right now, though, officially.
Which is the way it is right now, except that right now, currently, store championships were labeled in the middle category of a competitive event,
sure.
And regionals were up with nationals and worlds and all the other things.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of the older players would agree with me when I say that store championships just don't have the same competitive feel or numbers normally also that regionals do, and definitely not for the nationals. So I always thought of store championships as a little, and I think that's my bias, because when I first started playing Thrones, there wasn't store championships. There was only regionals. You could only get to one or two of them unless you traveled all over the place, and they were bigger, more focused events. And now store championships seem to be like, I don't know, they're everywhere.
To me, a store championship now is barely above a game night kit.
It is a game night kit, well, in my mind.
That's what they're ranking it at the moment, basically.
Okay. Well, I agree with FFG.
One will have a more strict tournament structure, but they will still both be considered relaxed events, which is the way they argue it.
Yes.
And I'm fine with that. I actually, this is another document where I feel they've done a good job, which is surprising. It's another one where I don't think they've taken two steps back. This particular document is a generic template for most of their games. It defines things like player roles, tournament levels, so that these things are standardized. I like that. It has a couple of rules that may matter for us that don't make it into our own tournament rules. Things like minors can't play without the permission of their parents. But probably the most interesting thing in there is that they go into some details about different kinds of cut. They talk about standings-based, record-based, and graduated cuts. Did you guys go through that?
I did not.
I glanced at it all.
Do you think you could explain it like just briefly so I can get up to speed?
I can try. A standings-based cut is what we do already. You do a certain number of Swiss rounds, and then you say the top 16 people in standing will continue on to either further Swiss rounds or single limb. Record-based is you say anyone with over 20 points will get through, and then we'll go on usually with Swiss rounds. So you say, so it's like a cutoff based on points rather than standing.
Sure.
But graduated is a little bit different, and it's the most interesting. It's their attempt to fix the strength of schedule issue. And there, it's a special type of cut where you say, you make a cut to something like top 10, or top 24 or something of that like, and then you fill it up with other people that have the same record as the lowest standing player in the cut. So basically, if I said 24 plus 8, which is the way that the example they give, you take the top 24 players in standing, and then if the lowest person out of those 24, the 24th place, is a 4-2, then you take 4-2s up to the next 8 to fill out your bracket.
Okay.
But if there are only two other 4-2s, you only take the 2.
Okay.
So you might have 26 people in your cut, or you might have 29 because you haven't mathed it out, but you're basically filling up to make sure that nobody fails on strength of schedule. They only fail on points.
Well, it has to be a multiple of 4, doesn't it, in order to make the bracket work correctly?
Well,
have like buys in the cut?
they say it usually continues with additional Swiss rounds, but it works fine with single elim so long you basically give people with the highest standing a bye in the first round.
Okay.
So in that 28 plus or 24 plus 8 suggestion, if you only had six other people you were worming in, then seeds 1 through 6 would get a bye in the first round, which is not really a problem.
And I kind of like that. I think the first person getting a bye because they're the king of Swiss, just reward.
Sure. I mean, I am all for any solution, anything that you just outlined, so long as it fixes to me the main problem with cuts right now, and that is they are too thin. So, for example, I went to a tournament at Huzzah Hobbies on Sunday. There's a guy that drove 3 hours to get to the tournament. He went 4-1, and because there was 26 people in a cut to top four, he didn't make the cut. And that, to me, cannot happen if they want people to continue to travel for these tournaments.
Yep.
I wrote an entire article on that. I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's fine to have systems that don't have cuts. It's fine to have all sorts of different systems. But if you're going to have a cut and it's going to eliminate people on strength of schedule, I think that's idiotic.
But on the bright side, he is the featured match on A Meager Contribution this week, and he beats former world champion Dan Seafeld. Spoiler.
He's famous.
Oh. Anytime I can watch Eric Butzloff lose a match, you just let me know, okay, Dennis?
If only he could lose more.
I know. Bugger.
All right. Well, do you guys want to move on to the actual Game of Thrones tournament rules document that just went up today?
Yeah.
This document is a couple steps back.
Uh-oh.
This one I don't like so much.
This is another one that I have not read through yet, so if you can go over it quickly, I'd like a Cliff's Notes version so I can get up to speed.
Well, I think I can summarize it like this. It starts off with the line, "All changes and additions made to this document since the previous version are marked in red." There's nothing marked in red.
Because it's pure new, right?
That's the FFG we all know and love.
I'm adding in an editor's note here. A fair bit of the content here has been cut to remove redundancy with the article that I wound up writing the next day because the article format was a slightly better way to present some of the math. So this is an abridged version. I recommend you check out the article on CardGameDB called "What Are They Smoking?"
Don't you do editing for FFG, Alex?
Yeah, they didn't get me on this one. My name's not in that document anywhere, thank God. So there's a lot of stuff in there that has not been through proofreading, which is a bit of a fail on that point. But there are a number of important points that we should go over that are changes from the existing system. So one, for instance, is that your sleeves now have to be opaque, regardless of whether you're using alt arts or not. If you're playing in a formal, so a regional and up, your card sleeves have to be opaque for both your plots and your regular cards.
And again, as far as my understanding was that was always the requirement and just it was never enforced.
No, I believe it really was. If you were using alt art cards, then you needed opaque backs. But otherwise, you needed sleeves, but they didn't have to be opaque.
Could be see-through or something.
Yeah. But there's another point in there that may mess some people up because some people don't necessarily do this. Obviously, all the sleeves for your draw deck have to be the same, but they now say that all the sleeves for your plot deck do too. And I don't think there were that many people doing it, but in theory, you could have each of your plots in a different sleeve.
I did that at Worlds.
Oh, yeah, you did at one point, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. And then I would switch my plots between matches.
So there's actually a reason I could see doing that for when plots have to be chosen at random. Like if your plots are all in different sleeves, somebody could easily. So wasn't there an epic battle that said if you lost the challenge, you had to choose your next plot at random?
Yeah, but you can still have your opponent choose. In theory, he has no knowledge of your plots.
Unless it's round 8.
Unless it's round 2. You're right.
No, but
I would
change the sleeves, Dennis. That was the funny part.
No, I'm talking mid-game. If you're on plot 8 and he's paying attention, he knows exactly what
you're
remember
all the colors.
You have a good point. Another big change in here, and this is new, is that you can concede a game, and we've always been doing it, but we've never been allowed to do. Like, if you're behind by a whole bunch, you shake hands and you're done. But now you can officially concede, and it's not considered collusion. But more importantly, you can officially intentional draw.
Anything that makes it harder for collusion, I'm all for.
You can intentional draw? I did not see that.
Here's another editor's note. Again, we've actually cut this discussion a little bit because of the heavy use on numbers, and we've pulled it out to a separate discussion between John and I after this segment, specifically on intentional draws. So if it sounds a little light to you, we wanted to give a few of Dennis's main thoughts before going on to discussing it in its full 20-minute segment.
That
you can
huge.
Intentional draw.
This could actually happen what happens in Magic, where people go 4-0 and then they draw.
Yep.
And then they're in the cut.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is maybe another copy-paste mistake from another game? Because I really don't like the sound of that.
I do not think this is a copy-paste. I mean, I know that it was the case in Star Wars.
But isn't that tacitly encouraging collusion? Because you and I, if we're both at the top, we can sit there and say, if we just take a draw, we're both guaranteed to make it, which inadvertently is going to shoulder somebody out of the bottom of the cut.
It does collide a little bit with the rules on collusion, and it certainly, a lot of people have thoughts on this from a sportsmanship perspective as well.
Right. It is. I don't think it promotes good sportsmanship. In fact, there was a controversy at one of the DC regionals last year where somebody accused Seth of slow playing just so that he could get a mod win so that one of his friends could make it into the cut versus somebody else. Yeah. And it was a gigantic deal. And now they're saying that that's okay, that Seth can do that.
Well, not that anybody could do that. He could come in and they could shake hands and they could both get a mod win. So they can get a draw, not a mod win. Which is 2 points, right?
Which is less than the full 5 points or even the 4 points that you would get from a mod win. So the system doesn't reward draws as highly. It's not like when it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think thankfully, I believe most Thrones players are competitive enough to not do this unless they are undefeated and both are guaranteed to make the cut just so that they can sort of have a break before the cut. Mm-hmm. I don't think if there's two people that are 4-1, they're going to be trying to sneak into the cut with a draw. They're going to want to play and win their game.
I think especially with the basic structure, a 4-1 with the draw in the end is not sufficient.
Would a 4-draw be sufficient?
It's like a 4 wins and a mod win. So, again, in a basic, it's not going to make it. In an advanced, it will, but you'd have made it anyway because the advanced are ridiculous. And we'll get to that very soon.
You made it anyway, not with a 4-loss.
Not with a 4-loss, no.
So you
might, again. The advanced really is ridiculous.
Somebody will sit down and figure out the exact math for all of this that's listening right now, and we'll have the answers shortly, I'm sure.
Because Alex obviously hasn't done the math exactly for us yet.
That's because these documents came out an hour ago.
Oh, my God.
Come on. I had a kid to put to bed.
Look, I'm normally not interested here, but this is about the cut, Alex. This is an important piece of math. Someone who's good at it has to do this. You can't let me and Dennis try to do this. We're going to have a couple of beer. We're going to get lost in Orlando.
No, but I'm telling you, it's not going to matter anyway because the other biggest piece of news out of this tournament structure document is that the basic structure, which is what you can use for a tournament, and you announce this beforehand and it means a certain thing, is exactly the same as the one we're complaining about right now for store championships. But the advanced structure has some of the exact same points. Like, I think it's 76 players, it's 6 rounds, top 8, exactly the same. It has some points where it's even worse, or the same number of rounds and not gaining anything. And then look at that, 9 to 12 players, 4 Swiss rounds, top 4. 9 players, top 4. 13 players, top 8. A 13-player top 8 tournament? You can basically intentional draw every single round and probably make it in, as long as someone plays their game and loses.
Hopefully, Eric.
Dennis is brilliant.
No, honestly, what kind of strange thing must someone have been smoking to think that a 13-player tournament could possibly do with a top 8 cut? This is almost worse than the basic
structure. Why don't you talk to the players again? Oh, I agree. It's really sad. Let's get off this and get to a topic we can all agree on. Let's talk about this other less official announcement that some of the board games might be being televised by ESPN and have a $50,000 cash prize for the winner of these tournaments. And it looks like they are going to have qualifiers that will then qualify you for these tournaments in Vegas. And if you're the winner, you're taking home money. Did you guys read this?
I did. I posted it.
Dennis, did you read it? Because you commented on it, so I'm guessing you read it.
I read it very, very closely, and it made me very, very unhappy.
I think it's awesome.
Why?
I think it's awesome because if Game of Thrones gets airtime on ESPN, how cool is that? There'll be some people that will actually check out the game now because they'll feel like there's this qualification and invitee, this exclusivity that they can achieve if they get good enough. They'll see the tour as something that's interesting. They'll see that there's a cash prize as interesting, and I think it'll just attract a lot of people to the game. Personally, I played in poker for a long time, and I still play a little bit, but nothing like before. And I played in some of these larger poker tournaments with cash prizes, and I found that the people at those tables, though they took the game very seriously during the during the game, they were serious, you know, but we still had time to joke around after. We still had drinks. They were still really nice people. There wasn't a ton of cheating. So I think, you know,
a reasonable amount of cheating.
Well, there's always some. There's always one bad apple that tries something stupid somewhere, you know. And I don't think that's a reflection on any game. And I think even now we have cheating in Thrones. So to say that there's not going to be cheating at, you know, or attempted cheating at some of these events is to say that there's no cheating now, which is not true.
All right, I have very, very strong opinions on this. That I agree with you that if they offer a $50,000 cash prize for any level of Thrones tournament, it is absolutely going to attract a lot of people to the game. That I can agree with you. I think the majority of the people that type of attention attracts will not be the type of people that I want in our community. And let me explain why. Yes, people who play poker, there is money involved. There's a fundamental difference between poker and Thrones, and that is, if you take the money away, poker doesn't exist. Poker is a game that only exists because you're wagering money. Like, if there's no money involved and you're not betting, there's no poker. Thrones, Magic, all these other games can't exist without money. Right now, every single person who is in the Thrones community is here for roughly the same reason, and that is they either love the universe of Thrones, they love the gameplay, or they love the people. The people that are going to be joining the community, if there is a cash prize, are going to majorly be here to win that money. And that, to me, makes it completely different dynamic at these tournaments.
Let's take a look at like chess. So competitive chess also gives out cash prizes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great example in something that a lot of people don't know about the cash prizes in chess. Some people do.
I didn't.
A large portion don't. And that I don't think negatively affects the chess. And I think Game of Thrones is closer to chess than poker probably, because I find that repetition play, there's luck in Game of Thrones, but it's much more limited than at a poker table, which you might have bigger swings and you have to play more sessions in order to basically get your skill to make you money. Chess is probably the opposite end, where it's almost all skill, right? There's no luck in chess.
It depends. It's if you're white, then you have a strong advantage. So there is a sort of coin flip at the beginning.
The coin flip. So there's
what are we talking about?
Chess.
And everything else. Fine. Yeah. All right.
But you know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is basically that there's monetary prizes in a lot of these other games that I would consider strategy games, and it didn't hurt them. It helped them.
Okay. Now here's the difference. Chess, what is the monetary prize for winning a chess tournament?
$1 million, I think, for the top.
$1 million? And how many people are winning that prize?
Well, presumably one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let me just Google.
I'll start out and say that a year ago, in fact, I think that it's probably a quote of me on the cast saying that I thought that the idea of putting money and cash prizes into Thrones would be disastrous. And I would have been wholeheartedly supported you. With this announcement, I sort of looked at it again. And I have a couple reasons why I don't feel that's necessarily going to be the case. So the first question that I'd ask you guys is that are competitive events with bigger prizes any worse within the community than competitive events with fewer prizes?
What do you mean
if there's
by
a
worse?
Flight to Gen Con on the line or to Worlds on the line, if there's a card design, do you feel like the attitude of players changes and negatively affects your play experience? Do you feel like Worlds is a shittier tournament to be at than your local regional?
I wouldn't say that it's a worse experience. I would say the only difference to me personally is the level of nerves that I experience while I'm playing. You definitely get the sense that there is more on the line, but I don't think it really changes my play at all.
Okay. And do you think it changes the tournament? Like, is someone more or less likely to, you know, be a dick to you and put in simple terms?
Absolutely not. But I could see the argument that they would, if somebody is going to be into cheating, they are going to be cheating at that level as opposed to a store championship. That would be the only difference.
Not letting you cheat.
To go back on the chess thing. So it is $1 to $2 million for the top event. And your average professional chess player that's playing at the highest level of the game, and there's not a lot of them, are making somewhere like $1 million each a year from just chess winnings alone.
That is absolutely shocking to me. I don't know what else to say. That it's shocking.
Yeah. So I have a second question to follow up on the, are competitive tournaments any worse? The second is, if we have one end goal of $50,000 somewhere in the distance for a specific tournament circuit, is that even comparable to a game like Magic, where there's money involved in lower levels, where there's money involved in buying the cards, where even you go into a low-level tournament in the store, you're expecting store credit and money all the way from the lowest level to the highest level, where here we're talking about one specific circuit that has as an end goal some money, and yet each the qualifiers and so on won't be building up to that in the same way. So it won't be as pervasive. Right?
The qualifiers.
Did they say in the article how they are going to invite people to this tournament?
They did not. They said that it would involve local stores and that stores would get half of the money if their people would like get $50,000 as well for having fostered that.
There was a diagram that actually explained that there would be three tiers.
I did see that, yes.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by tiers?
So they're going to have like your
store championship regionals and then vague.
They're using poker terminals. They'll be satellites. So basically you'll play and the winner of those will get invited to regionals. And then the regional will get you to the final. There'll probably be some minor cash prizes at the regional as well as the fight. And I'm thinking the finals, if they're paying out $50K to the winner.
So
I don't know.
I can only really get behind this if they structure it in the following way. They need to schedule it such that it does not compete with store championships. I would like to see it as a completely separate entity so it doesn't draw attendance Agree. Away from store championships.
Agree.
And I also think that they should, rather than having it be satellites and other ways to get into it of their own circuit, I actually feel like it should be a prestige thing where after you've already won a major tournament or maybe say, let's say made top eight at Worlds, that is what gets you the invite to this tournament. So you can't just participate in the money side. The money tournament, in my opinion, should be a reward for excelling at the community-based tournament side.
Well, right now their finals are in November, which conflicts with Worlds. And their regionals are from June to September, which conflicts with regionals.
So I have to believe that their Thrones is not going to be part of this then.
That's a very valid point. We have absolutely no confirmation that any FFG or Asmodee North America game will be involved. The only quote we have is that the people who are organizing this, they did say if a game is being played in your store, chances are pretty good we're going to feature it. And Thrones and Netrunner are the kind of games that people talk about alongside things like Magic and so on.
I would be more interested to hear who has the final say here, because the way Christian Peterson has run FFG, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know him personally. He hasn't come out and said this, but nothing FFG has ever done has hinted at anything like this. And I got to imagine if I'm him, he does not want this. So it will be very interesting to see now that they are they owned by Asmodee? Is that how this works? Or is it a merger?
I mean, it depends who you ask.
They're owned by Asmodee.
They're owned by Asmodee, but Christian Peterson is basically CEO of Asmodee North America.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So you think it would be his final decision?
In that case, yes. I also think that it's worth noting that FFG has undergone some internal restructuring in their organized play. The organized play stuff we were talking about, most of it was announced by a new hire of theirs in organized play who has a huge Magic background. His name is Zach. So there certainly is that experience going into at least structuring things like these tournament rules documents and structuring things like formalizing the language so it's consistent.
How does Magic not know how to do cuts?
Magic does know how to do cuts, but they have best of three matches and they do like basically top eights for everything and nothing bigger. And if you don't make the cut based on SOS, you still get an invitation to the next tournament. So I don't know Magic very well anymore. It's been a long, long time. But Magic can afford to do top eights based on things like the fact that it does best of threes.
Yep.
So
as long as they can figure out a way to do so I would never participate in this because for me, I want to spend my time with people who are playing this game because they love this game and not because they want to try to win the money. So if they can figure out a way to do this where it doesn't disrupt the existing structure, then I would be okay with it from a conceptual standpoint. But it would have to be a pretty big about face to go from now the third version of this game having no cash prizes ever to all of a sudden offering cash prizes. Because once you start down that road, there's no stopping it.
Yeah,
it's just going to be that way
forever. People do events with cash prizes and stuff too, right? Like people take
How does that work with local gambling laws? Would that even be allowed?
It is because it's considered a game of skill.
Yep, it's not a given chance.
Interesting.
That's basically the line drawn there, that you're not technically gambling. You're betting on performance, not on. Yeah,
but you're still wagering, though, right? So it's.
That's legal in most places. I don't know specifically. I mean, I shouldn't be taken as legal authority, but that's generally the distinction as to whether you're allowed to award. The
same way
money.
Chess can do it.
Yeah. Huh. It's considered skill.
That would be what you would base it on, probably, but you'd have to get the game defined as a game of skill or a game of chance.
Man, I hate to say that I trust FFG, but I trust. I trust the people at FFG to not make a decision that will negatively impact the existing Thrones experience because people love it so much.
But now, I sort of want to pick your brain a bit because you mentioned you didn't want it integrated into the existing system. And then with the next sentence, you sort of said, if it's a reward for worlds, then that's fine. That
because
seems to
I want
be-
to encourage people to... There should be some reward. So the best player in the world should not be the one that wins the $50,000. It should still be the person that is winning worlds and getting the card design. To me, the card design is the best prize in this game, even over $50,000, because it's the most prestige
I'll
you could possibly
get.
I mean, honestly, $50,000 would be a lot of money for me right now. It would completely change my life. And I would probably take it in a second over a card design, but I would be way more proud of a card design because there's other ways that I can get money. There's only one way I can get a card design, and that's by winning worlds.
The Iron Price.
Exactly.
And I can definitely agree with that. Another point that you made earlier on was that you say that a lot of us play the game for the same reasons. And you listed a couple of different reasons, which is fine. I agree with you. But I would say that we have some players for whom the competition aspect is the greatest aspect. We have quite a few of them. And rightly or wrongly, the meta that you're associated with is frequently associated with the concept of being that high-end competitive players, the sure. ones for whom that matters more than, not necessarily more than the community, but I guess that's something that people would say.
I think that's absolutely something people would say because it's true.
Okay. Well, then you said it and not I. And
I'm absolutely saying it. And I don't think anybody in the DC meta would argue with that for a second, that they want to win more than they care about the community.
Okay. And so I think that given that we already have those players and we're still able to foster an amazing community, and given, you know, I don't think it all falls apart because we're going to attract a few bad apples that we can then be rude to and basically tell them, to, like, I mean, I think it takes more than inviting a dozen of the worst kind of Magic players into this community for it to fall apart. And I'm not saying that that's a great thing, but I'm saying that if that's the cost towards getting
another
the exposure and getting to see this game on TV, that sounds all right to me.
Because, come on, Dennis, you have to admit, how cool would it be that they're doing the top 16 match on ESPN, and it's
I could get disqualified on ESPN instead of in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. Your ugly mug that we're looking at, and you look up, and they're describing this. You know, he's been in the game for 6 years. He's done this. He's got his own YouTube channel, and blah blah blah. And, you know, all these people, and then they look up, and it's some guy that's unknown, and you crush him. Wouldn't that be a great feeling?
I mean. I cringe.
You're talking about like face on a card, face on TV.
It's, I mean, Jesus Christ, some of the people in this community seeing them on TV. Oof,
yeah,
channels will go out of business.
Sure.
But like, so I made the point in the thread. So you see how brutal and how crazy people get over Melee right now with $0 on the line, nothing but a card design. If you have $50,000 on the line for a Melee table, friendships will be broken that will never be repaired because of this. Like, there's so right now, a brutal Melee game will be brutal at the table. As soon as it's over, we're all going to the bar. You have $50,000. I'm telling you right now, if I make a deal with you in Melee and you break it and you cost me $50,000, I'm never talking to you again. And that is not a good thing.
That's true. But I don't think they would be just.
There are competitive tournaments for board games that have multiple players at it in which people make and break deals.
Yeah. Like
in which there is money on the line.
What's the most competitive board game?
This is completely foreign to me. The only game, so just so everybody knows that's listening, the only game that I play for the most part is Thrones. So when I go to Gen Con, I walk around the dealer's hall for 5 minutes just as a goof, and then I go to my hotel and I play Thrones, and that's it. So I don't really have any background knowledge of any of this stuff.
I'm pretty sure that the championships for both Catan and things like Ticket to Ride are rather prestigious.
you have kids, you have credit cards. You're talking, if I break a deal with you that literally costs you $50,000, you are not going to be salty with me forever.
But the point I'm making is that it's not that broken deal. It's you gambling on them keeping the deal that lost you that money.
Not necessarily. You're trusting somebody.
Yeah, but you don't trust someone to keep a deal when it's not in their best interests. You never do. In a game, I mean, within the context of the game rules. I mean, that's even independent of the money. You're trying to win.
I highly doubt that they would end up having Melee be the featured format in a competitive scene anyways.
I agree.
But I imagine even at the final table of a joust, if 50,000's on the line, there's going to be some sort of handshake where that money is going to be split up before the first card is turned anyways.
It's quite likely as well.
I mean, if you have two broke nerds playing a game for $50,000, I'm imagining they're going to be splitting it before they turn the card.
Yeah, well, it might be 35-15 or something.
But that's what they do in poker, too.
Yeah, I agree.
That's fine, right?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. Yeah, what I was saying is sort of to mitigate my previous objections, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I also think that greater exposure like this will force better judging, better rules language, more consistent things, which are all things that I obviously like. I think that I agree that there is a cost in that some people will be attracted to the game for purely a financial incentive, although I think that if that's a separate structure from the rest, we won't see those people, if you want, contaminating store championships and regionals.
Okay.
And the like.
There was a $20,580 grand prize for the last Monopoly tournament.
There you go.
National Monopoly tournament. Like, I'm finding cash prizes for all the board games, man.
That's interesting.
That's Monopoly, though. Like, how much more rent?
Yeah, you're definitely correct that if there's that kind of money on the line, they are going to have to streamline all of the rules and make sure that you have K-Tom on site at all times.
Hey, because those I might get it from Vegas as a rules lawyer. That would be fantastic. I have a personal reason to be there.
Those rulings are going to be so important.
Yeah.
At least Moribund doesn't exist anymore.
Imagine if a judge made a misruling, which has happened at Worlds before, right?
Sure. It's happened at Super Bowls.
But man, I would lose my mind.
K-Tom checking the instant replay. Did his hand leave the card or not?
All right. So overall, my verdict is the new organized play structure is a win. The new tournament structure. I like the fact that they've formalized language. I like the fact that they're doing a better job across the games, that they've got specific roles defined and what you can and can't do. And I hate the new tournament document for Thrones that has absolutely ridiculous cuts and hasn't been proofread.
I'm very happy with the new double circuit getting Star Wars shipped out of the original Worlds. I agree with you that they need to proofread that new tournament rules document, and I really hope that cash prizes are never part of Thrones.
Fair enough. All right.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dennis. We've talked for an hour and 10 minutes. Hopefully that'll make a good 45-minute episode. I think
before I step out, I would just indulge me for 1 second. I would like to promote the Dance with Dragons tournament that New York City is going to be having on April 30th, downtown Manhattan at the Complete Strategist. They gave me a sneak peek of their kick-ass alternate art for the confiscation plot. I can say without reservation, it is the greatest alternate art that I have ever seen in this game, and it is worth traveling for all by itself.
You know,
I'd say if people saw the Valor that they did 2 years ago.
It is Valor, that alternate art Valor type quality, if not better. It's the same artist that did it. And if you are considering coming at all, trust me, you will not be disappointed. April 30th, downtown Manhattan, Complete Strategist. Be there or you will regret it.
One of the things that came out of all this that we felt we should pull to a separate discussion because it's rather controversial and it's kicking up a big storm is the subject of IDs.
So what does ID stand for, Alex?
You asking me because I just told you like 5 minutes ago or to educate the listeners?
I mean, I know now, but some others may not.
It's an intentional draw where both players agree to draw a match before playing it.
And we mentioned this in the other part of the cast where we talked that, you know, Magic does this, Pokemon does this. They even do it in Scrabble. Oh, yes. Okay.
But they don't do it in most sports.
No.
Partly because the viewership is an important aspect. You're playing more for the TV viewing in many of these professional cases than you are for the standing in the tournament.
Yeah, it wouldn't be very fun if two teams skated onto the ice, shook hands, and skated away.
No. So, first of all, one of the reasons this is kicking up a big storm is actually outside of Thrones, in games like Star Wars and Netrunner, where they've just been implemented as well. And the reason it's not the same thing in Thrones as it is in those is there you play two matches, and an intentional draw is splitting those matches. So normally you get 4 points for a match win, for winning both games, so two for each. And if you split, you each get two. Oh. In Thrones, the intentional draw proposition is not zero sum. Normally for winning a match, you get 5 points. For losing one, you get zero. But if you guys both draw, you each get two, which is fewer total points than the other system. So it's slightly harder to game the system in Thrones. It's still very possible.
Right. However, in these other games, it definitely is.
And this one as well. It very much depends on the cuts. There are times where the right decision is to intentional draw, and we'll get into that a little bit. I sort of wanted to start with some reasons why it might be a good thing, and then sort of delve into some reasons that get grayer and grayer until we can see where we draw the line.
We already talked about a little bit this on the cast earlier, which was the fact that it's hard to stop players from actually doing it if they wanted to. It's just playing it out until an intentional draw happened.
Yeah, as a judge, it's a difficult decision to make to say that certain people are stalling, to disqualify them based on that, to say that people are playing suboptimally. Rather than calling them idiots, you're calling them cheaters. That's not an easy call to make as a judge. That's a fair bit of pressure on you. And allowing them to do this kind of thing, especially, you know, when two friends meet up, if they want to intentional draw because they want to, you might not know their friends. So really, it takes some of the burden away from the TO. Another point following the same line that I think is still fairly legitimate is that the rules allow us to concede, whether that's at 14 power or because I have to leave the tournament. Whatever the case is, you can leave the table and concede.
Yep.
So that means that even within that structure, and I think everybody agrees that, you know, sometimes someone has to go, it's fine. But you could use that as the same excuse to manipulate a friend's score. You could sit down to a friend and say, all right, fine, I'll concede this match, or I'll leave the tournament or whatever to boost your standing.
Yeah.
And that's even more egregious because you're giving a full 5 points to someone, but the rules sort of have to allow that to happen. So to me, the intentional draws in that situation are less of an issue, and they just follow naturally from the fact that we're allowing concessions to happen. I think another point where most people would agree it's fine, there are some people starting to say that this is the grayer area, is that it's quite common for a tournament to end up with only two undefeateds who play in the last round of Swiss. They're both going to make the cut no matter what the result of that game is. So why force them to play that, especially since there's no real reward for finishing top of Swiss within our brackets and mechanics. So this allows you to incentivize doing very, very well, playing the harder matches the whole way up, and then say, all right, well, you get a break in your last game because you don't need to play that sort of redundant game. And I know that players are somewhat treating that last game that way anyway. I know lots of players say, you know, I didn't play my fullest in that game because I didn't want to show him these plots because I might see him in the cut. You know, things like that. So allowing them to just intentional draw takes away some of that and gives a slight reward for having performed very, very well up until the very last game. So far, you're still okay with this?
All of these were okay. Let's get into those gray areas.
We're not quite at the gray areas yet. The next one that I still think is not very gray is that if you make standings more important in general, and you've talked before about wanting a prize support system that rewards where you finish in mm-hmm. Swiss. And if you have a system like they talk about the progression cuts based on record or the graduated cuts, where if you finish really high, you might get a bye in the first round of the cut.
Yep.
If you reward those more, then there's fewer incentives to intentional draw anyway, because you actually really want to be the one that finishes first of Swiss, because that almost guarantees you a bye in the first round of the cut.
Which is sweet.
Exactly. Then you stop using intentional draws at the same extent to game the system. And so I think that if you were able to make standing more important, period, then ID would be less of an issue.
I don't even think that's gray.
Okay. So let's get to the gray areas. Is it okay if two friends, they each have a loss, they don't want to be the person to eliminate their friend, and they're going to take their chances on the next round where they'll be playing against someone and win or lose on their own merits? So they're sitting down against a friend and say, I don't want to be the one that kicks them out of the cut for a second loss. He doesn't want to be the one.
We're going
to
shake here, get our energy back, and play the next round.
Now, that's grayer.
It's going to happen a lot.
And do you think it's okay?
I mean, if they're allowing intentional draws, I guess, because other people will be doing it. Like, you can't say it's okay in some circumstances and not another.
From a moral perspective, if you don't have to implement intentional draw, but you're seeing that this is one of the consequences, is this one that worries you?
It does worry me a little, because what it means is that the more popular metas, the people that are coming with more players they play with, have a higher percent chance of running into the situation where they're getting this draw, then they just have to win one of their other matches and get a draw somewhere else to win the game. In theory, if I went in and I played you and we're in round three, and we decided to intentional draw, which I don't think we would, but let's pretend we did. That would mean that I'm actually playing a weaker opponent, because I'd probably be paired with the people that lost their game, not the people that won their games, correct?
In theory, it's a 50-50 chance. Depending on how many people intentional draw, you'll be paired against other people who intentionally drew as well. But if you two were the only two that drew, then one of you would get paired up and one of you would get paired down in a perfect bracket.
So that's interesting. You're rolling a dice. You could possibly play, in theory, weaker players because you took that draw.
Potentially, yes. So, I think that one concerns me a little. You know, even if it has the right reasons where you don't want to be the one that, you know, eliminated your spouse or whoever it is from the tournament or your best friend at their first tournament or whatever, given that you can concede, like, it's kind of tough. And I certainly would see that as a gray area. Because not only does it affect how the two of you guys wind up playing your next round, and you could both make the cut by winning now or both not make the cut by losing, rather than one of you being guaranteed the cut by playing that match, it also affects the position of other players. If you guys both make the cut through that strategy, then you did it by intentional draws, which was sort of collusion to manipulate scoring in the field.
Right, because if we both went on to win our next game, four with one intentional draw and a loss, we're probably in the cut.
Again, it'll depend on which structure we're using, and we will get into that a little bit because it's actually, I thought it was an easy math problem. It's not, because it's hard to predict the strategies for optimal draws. In the end, I think I have to simulate it with various strategies of players and see what comes up, but I don't have the time to do that this week or next week. I'm sure it's been done for other games, so maybe there's already a model, and if a listener can tell us to see exactly how this will impact things, but I do have some basic math to talk about as we get to that. Yeah, that basically brings us to the main point that, you know, aside from the sportsmanship concern, and we can't really debate that much, whether you believe that every match should be played and all these other things, you know, that's definitely a concern. But what we're worried about is how the system gets gamed and what the result is on the play of everybody else. And so that's the question is, how often are intentional draws from other players going to take up spots from legit 5-1s or legit 5-2s at a tournament that would otherwise that didn't have the option to intentional draw simply because they lost later or earlier in the tournament?
So they would never actually take a spot from a 5-1 in Thrones.
Yes, they can. They can, under concerns. So basically, what I did here is I took three arbitrary sizes of tournaments and I treated them as basics or advanced. And we'll quickly go over what that means. So the basic structure for a 16-person tournament is four rounds with no top cut. So obviously, intentional draws do not matter. The only people who have any benefit in taking an intentional draw is, well, nobody. So if we look at that in the advanced structure, 16-person, that's a four rounds top eight, which is ridiculous. Half the field makes the cut. But that means four people with a record less than 3-1 would make the cut. So intentional draws would play a huge portion in that.
Well, let's look at the tournament sizes that matter, like the 160s, the 200s at Gen Con, because that's what people are really caring about here. They're not worried about a store championship with 20 people and someone taking an intentional draw, are they?
Well, the thing is that those tournaments, we don't even know what the rules for those will be because they can offer these graduated cuts, and they said that they might do that at premier events. You can set the graduated cuts in ways that disincentivize intentional draws, except the very, very top, the two tops of Swiss will never really have much of a disincentive to do it.
Right.
But when we're running store championships and regionals, which is what most people will attend within the tournament structure, I think that's where you're worried about most of the damage being. No, you disagree?
Well, maybe regionals, sure. But you're looking at like 30
Yeah, so the next one I looked at was a 32-person tournament. If you run that as a basic, that's
five rounds of Swiss
and a top four, which means that if you won all your games and then intentional drew, you'd make the cut. But basically, 1-4, one will already fail to make the cut. So you can only intentional draw if you're undefeated going into the last round.
Yeah.
So again, not a big deal. That's a scenario that we're generally okay with, or so.
But now, if the top cut was 8.
Well, if the top cut was 8, which is exactly what it is in a advanced structure, so it's still 5 rounds of Swiss and a top 8, then 3 people with a record less than 4-1 will make the cut. So again, we get to a situation where intentional draws will significantly affect who those 3 people are. Yeah. Because 2 intentional draws is the same as a mod win, basically. So if you're 4 wins and 2 intentional draws because you won your first 4 games and then you draw the next 2, you're basically putting yourself in the cut. Or making it very likely that you get in the cut because you won those first 3 games. So you start to get in a realm where things aren't looking so good.
Why are we so quiet?
I don't know. I was expecting you to have some sharp
pearl of wisdom.
Yeah.
No, there's nothing. This is math. This is true.
I mean, I think, and maybe this is just some arbitrary threshold, but I think if a strategy ever involves taking multiple intentional draws, which it does in some of these Magic and Pokemon games, and it can in this case, you win your first 3 games and then you intentional draw. And I should have said that, 4-1 records, not 5-1 records. I think if you're taking multiple intentional draws, then you're really damaging the integrity of the tournament. You're playing far fewer games on average. Other players are playing far fewer games. And the players who are playing their games are, you know, if they lose early, are being even more punished than they already are by the strength of schedule system.
Get lucky in the first 2 rounds, or you got to win all your games because people are going to be drawn ahead of you.
I think that that's one of the points. And I'm not scouring this for breaking points. Like, I took 16, 32, 64 because they're places where you get, like, one undefeated at the top of Swiss. The system is simple. You don't have fractions at that point. And so, you know, there may be points where that's considerably worse. So the next size I went up to was 64-person, which is 6 rounds, top 8 in a basic structure. One person with less than a 5-1 record will make it in. So double IDing your way into the cut is actually really, really gambling and probably shouldn't be done. And then the advanced, again, is 6 rounds, top 8. So it's actually exactly the same, and so it's not looking too bad there. The 16-person and the 32-person are heavily, heavily influenced by the intentional draw. And we'll go one point further and say that a 13-person tournament with the advanced structure that has a top 8, you can have a bye going into the tournament and intentional draw your way into the cut.
Sweet.
3 intentional draws.
0 games, as long as your opponents agree.
So that is a problem. Now the question is it a problem with intentional draws inherently, or a problem with the tournament structure?
Probably a problem with the tournament structure, because you could change the structure to disincentivize intentional draws, except for in certain circumstances.
I think, right? I'd agree, but I think a lot of players wouldn't. I think a lot of players don't like the concept of an intentional draw from a sportsmanship perspective, and I understand that. From a you came to a tournament to play perspective, and I understand that. I have not used buys simply because traveling.
If you're going there to play, that's up to the individual player. Like, why would someone else be mad that I didn't play? Isn't that up to me? I'm not stopping you from playing.
True, but the minute it starts to negatively impact your play, or your tournament experience, because the people who are not playing are being rewarded for it, you do feel cheated. There's definitely sportsmanship concerns. Thankfully, there aren't bribery concerns or intimidation concerns, or there shouldn't be, because in theory, the entire discussion on whether or not to intentional draw has to happen before the game and has to happen with a judge present.
There'll be some emotional events, you know, where 2 players that will be very close and they do the math and they're like, well, you know, there'll be one person who takes intentional draws that's not going to make it. And one player's like, I don't want to take the risk, or I want to play it. And the other guy's like, no, I don't want to play it. I want to, like, you know, let's do this. And then there's going to be some friendships that aren't going to work out, or be a little bit, I won't say not going to work, they'll be strained because of it. They'll be like, come on, man, you know, like, just take the draws so that we both can get in.
Yeah, I think that it's possible to make the tournament structure built in such a way that an intentional draw is only a reward in very, very limited circumstances, like the two kings of Swiss deciding to intentional draw.
Or anytime you've gone, yeah, five and, you know, zero, you can get your intentional drawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's that. Yeah. For the sixth round, not for the sixth and seventh. And you can do this by saying that the record to get into the cut is that you need 25 points, for instance. That's a standings-based cut, which means that two intentional draws will never make it because you cap at 24. Then again, that affects mod wins as well, but maybe mod wins should be affected heavily by that system. Although at that point, they're penalized almost as much as a loss or a draw. But I mean, there are the graduated cut and the standings-based cut or double elimination-style tournaments can potentially be used. Although in those cases, double elim, I don't think you can allow a draw in a double elim tournament.
No, you can't allow a draw.
Well, I think that sort of covers it. I don't want to be too judgmental one way or the other, because I know it's a fairly sensitive topic, but I'd really like to hear what people think, because like it or not, it's in the tournament rules right now. And if you do know of simulators that'll talk a little bit more about the strategies that are used with intentional draws and which situations, you know, two intentional draws will make the cut, I'd love to see that kind of information to map out some of the breaking points and maybe highlight the absurdity of it all to FFG or see that the system's fairly robust and then breathe a little sigh of relief, because right now I'm concerned. Very concerned, actually. I have a tip of the week for us, John, and I think you'll appreciate this one because I think it's one that you initially taught me. And it has to do with just not giving up information that you don't need to give up in a game in a number of ways. You'll see one of the very, very common examples is someone will draw a card, look at it, and put it to one specific side of their hand. You know, these sort of habits about sorting your hand, even if you're shuffling it for an intrigue challenge afterwards or whatever, are giving away information to your opponent that you can manipulate that sometimes, and you can start using it to manipulate your opponent, but you need to be aware you're doing it. And there are many, many things where people will look at their discard pile only when they're just about to use a card that interacts with it rather than regularly. You know, won't be asking hand size as often. There's just so much information that you can give away through what you do that you don't need to. And that's just giving up percentages you don't need to give.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hiding that information is extremely important. I always put my card in the exact same place when I draw it.
But even just like the cry of joy when you draw the right card, that's not necessarily information you want to give out.
I totally agree. You know, some people are like, they do an ooh or some type of noise that they're excited just after commenting 2 seconds ago that they really need something to kill, you know, guy X or Y.
I understand, you know, you're not supposed to be some sort of automaton. You're not supposed to hide behind your poker glasses and your scarf or your
job. You're not a robot. You're not Reynolds. You're not a robot. You're not Reynolds.
And you're not Peter Wilson, who actually wore sunglasses to Gen Con. I think Kyle Vansel did too, but that was because he was hungover, so we'll allow it. But yeah, try and think about the kind of information that you're giving away when you play. And you can give it away, but make sure you know you're giving it away. That you're not doing any of these things by accident and just giving your opponent a chance to react to that. The very first people to discover North America from Europe were Vikings, and it seems I've been invaded by three. We're joined by Jakob, Samuel, and Andreas, who's been on the cast as well before. In fact, all three of them have been on the cast before. So what brings you back to the cast?
Well, we're big fans. We just love being on the cast.
All right, so we're done then, yes?
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, since Jakob is having a bit of trouble keeping his championship winning ways up with the second edition, we figured we need to do something to get back on the cast. We started our own cast.
Wait, your technique for appearing more often on our cast is to have your own cast?
Yeah, I mean, do something a little bit offbeat, I think, as some of you will quite early on will figure out. But I mean, we're desperate. We just want to be on the show.
We might have another show next week. Who knows?
So whose brainchild is this new show?
I think Andreas has been on to both of us, me and Samuel, for a while. We're doing a podcast, and we've just felt like, what segment should we cover? there are so many good ones already, and I don't even have a chance of listening to all of them in 1 week as it is now. How would anyone want to do that? And then all of a sudden in the middle of last week, someone posted on the AGOT second edition Facebook group that they needed more podcasts. So
yeah, someone said that they had a 4-hour commute and they needed more.
Yeah. And I was thinking that that was a joke, and apparently not. So we decided to make the podcast happen, the Swedish one. And apparently we're known for having beards. So we made one with beards.
Podcast with beards. Beards are good, I'm told. I don't know. I haven't really had one. But doesn't this somewhat limit what guests you can have on?
Well,
I mean, it drastically narrows the number of female guests you can have on.
Yeah, but they make quality fake beards these days, so there are ways to go around that issue, I think. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, the first episode
you can be on, Alex. Don't worry, we'll fix it.
Yeah. Oh dear, that sounds even more dangerous. All right, so we can expect this roughly once a week, or just once in a lifetime and then never again? Is it a limited time offer?
Well, now that you're putting us on the spot, I guess we need to say yes, we try to make this once a week.
Okay. I'm glad you thought of this beforehand.
No, but in all seriousness, this is a serious try to make this a weekly podcast, yes.
All right. Well, I haven't listened to it yet because I just got linked to it. Apparently, Eddard Stark has the beard of the week.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to finding out why. Closing comments, John. What do we have for closing comments? Don't say nothing. Don't say anything?
We just said I wasn't allowed to say nothing.
Fine. I think that our next week's episode is likely to be a chapter pack review. The last card of the chapter pack was already spoiled today, so we were sort of wondering whether we should be doing it today, but we figured the organized play talk took precedence. So if you listen to this and you would like to be next week's one of our two reviewers, let us know what kind of position, you know, if you wanted to be the Nedley, the Shaga, or what kind of player type you'd like to be. And we'll see if we can squeeze someone into our... Yeah, still not sold on that. I think it's a step in the right direction. I should probably just back it as is. And Alex Kern has made a pretty good case for it. It just doesn't quite feel... I feel like we can do better. I don't feel like it's a bad one. I just feel like somewhere there's something we can do better, and I haven't given it enough thought.
Yeah, well, we can just ditch the Jamie player and call it the Asha.
Is Asha win at all costs?
She's kind of a forward in your face, smash you and win.
Really? She kind of goes with a subtle approach of offering people pine cones and wooden logs to try and win her crown. It doesn't work, but...
You are no fun, Alex. I was trying.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
Shouldn't affect other people's happiness. Maybe, you know, my favorite thing to do is just not play Thrones after I've traveled.
Just show up to tournaments and not play Thrones. Well, then you should be a judge now, John. You should be a judge.